You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
At this radio station, we do our utmost to abide by the Broadcasting Standards Authority and their rules and guidelines. If you seriously think we've crossed the line on air, give us a call on 309 4831 within 20 working days of the broadcast date and tell us about it. We'll be able to help you out and tell you the procedure if you wish to make a formal complaint to the Broadcasting Standards Authority. Fuck knuckles, cock and piss. Balls. Thank you.
Questions are all around us.
Learn.
Why is liquid cold?
Learn.
What is maths?
Learn.
Why does this, ow, hurt?
Learn.
What is the Enlightenment?
I don't know.
And now, thanks to the University of Auckland, it's time to ready, steady, learn.
This morning we're going to be speaking with Alan France, who is a professor of sociology at the School of Social Sciences, and he recently published an article in response to the proposed changes to superannuation. He was criticising the idea that generations are at war. Good morning, Alan.
Hi, kia ora, Hannah. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you this morning?
I'm good.
That's good. I wanted to start off by asking you, what do you mean when you say generation wars?
Well, it's not so much what I mean, it's actually what is how this kind of debate has been constructed. Of course, what happened, as we know, Bill English announced in Florida he was going to make some changes to super. And there was a whole range of kind of responses which sort of started to put this problem in, this is a generation, there's a generational war coming here, fighting over resources. And it was very much a kind of a media construction in the first instance. And I think it took people like Bill English a little bit by surprise because, of course, it wasn't really how he was framing this. This was a kind of an attempt to appease his voting base, the sort of baby boomers, as they call them, and was trying to sort of also address a long-term problem that New Zealand has, which is about an ageing population and who's going to pay for it, etc. And it didn't really kind of dawn on them, I don't think, that this was going to, the way it was going to pan out. But of course, huge amount of criticism came at them, and it was argued and it was put forward that there was some sort of war here, fighting over resources between different generations. So the argument was the millennials are going to suffer as a result of this, and the baby boomers have benefited over a number of years from, you know, sort of having advantages. And it was played out like that in the media a little bit. And, I mean, my response was to be quite critical of that because I don't think it really addresses some of the core issues that we should be thinking about.
Why do you think the media wanted to kind of frame it this way?
Oh, well, it sells newspapers. Yeah. It kind of, you know, gets attention. It gets people to sit up and take note. That's definitely one issue. But you've got to remember this kind of whole debate about generations has been bubbling along for a number of years, and it's quite media kind of, it's a media kind of source. So, of course, the notion of generations is a media construct in the first place, and it actually came out of marketing. You know, it's a way to try to profile certain groups in terms of selling products. So, you know, trying to identify what are the key characteristics of these age groupings. And then they attach labels to them and call them such. So they're not necessarily simple and straightforward and without their problems. And in fact, where does millennials end or start, or where does Generation Y end and start, where does baby boomers end and start? You know, there's a lot of ambiguity around some of that, and that we keep trying to frame our conversations around generations as though they're real and we all tie into them and we all know what generation we belong to.
Because I wanted to ask you as well, like, is this unique to our times, or have people kind of always felt this way about the elder generation? Because you briefly mentioned, like, advertising, how it's like a ploy.
Yeah, no, well, we're all aware of generations, particularly in terms of our families. So we know that there's, you know, we usually have grandparents who are from a different age, had a different experience of growing up, and same, you know, our parents and then our grandchildren. We're aware that within a kind of family kind of notion of generation, it's quite clear. And, of course, there has always been some attention on baby boomers, because in the 1950s and 60s in particular, there was quite a radical change took place, and baby boomers, they weren't called that at the time, of course, but, I mean, they become known as that as time has gone on. But so there wasn't aware there was quite a big change that took place in the 50s and 60s, and that has remained a kind of a defining feature we refer back to. You know, well, what happened then and what impact it's had on groups that have followed. There has always been a talk around generations, but it's only really over the last 20 years that the marketing has got into it in such a big time that they're wanting to define us and put us into little boxes and tell us where we belong in terms of a generation. We normally think about it in relation to our families.
Yeah, I mean,
intergenerational thing.
I'm guilty of saying to my mum even, like, oh, you had it so much easier, and then she'll turn around and say, no, we didn't, you have it easy. So there is that constant kind of argument where people can't kind of, like, reach this middle point.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, we're always thinking about social change and how change is taking place in society, and we try to have some sort of models about looking back and forward and seeing what has happened and what the levels of change have been. And generation seems to be quite a useful tool for doing that. But I think when we start to break it down, as your mum probably said, you know, actually it's a bit more complicated than that. Mm. It wasn't as straightforward. I mean, one of the things we could say, for example, about baby boomers, and at the moment they're being constructed as the sort of the baddies, and they've taken all the resources from the next generations, and they're living a life, and they're off skiing, and, you know, spending the kids' inheritance, and all of those kind of things. But in reality, that social group, yes, they're very diverse to start with, right? They are, you know, inequality between and within generations is quite significant. So we have, you know, people within the baby boomers that have done exceptionally well. Some people, you know, have managed to kind of link into the housing boom of the 2000s, and that has given them a substantial amount of boost in their kind of future incomes. Some people have benefited in other sort of ways by, you know, investing in different things. And, you know, that's quite normal that in generations some people will do well. But some people haven't done so well. Not all baby boomers own houses. They don't have a great deal of wealth. Mm. There are many older people here in New Zealand that are living on super and are living on benefits. You know, we have to recognize that it's not this notion of baby boomer, which lumps everybody into one category, is a very diverse group as well. Mm. And there are winners and losers in that group too, very much so. So, yes, you know, your mum's right to pull out for those kind of things, that it wasn't as easy as what people seem to think it was. But there are real issues, of course, today that, you know, are creating some of these tensions, you know, because for young people, as we know, and for many of your listeners, you know, it's a different world. It is a different world to what their parents and their grandparents grew up in. So, you know, now when I was in my teens, you know, I didn't go to university. I didn't go till I was later in life, and I left home very early. I was in a relationship, a family, and in my early 20s, I'd kind of become the adult that my parents hoped and expected me to become.
Yeah.
I'm not sure they were happy with what I'd done, but there you go. That's a different story. But, you know, today that's not the way that it works. Right, for many young people, leaving home is incredibly difficult.
Yeah.
It's not easy to get that independent income that you need to be able to get into the housing market. And we know about the housing market in New Zealand, and particularly in Auckland, how difficult it is to leave home. But also now you can't get into a job 16, 17, 18 and start earning money. You have to go into education. You know it's a need and a requirement to get education, to get qualifications so you can get into the better jobs. It takes a lot longer to get out there into the labor market than what it did for people of my age. And along that way, it's a very tricky road. You know, we keep being told that kids need, you know, young people need all of these skills. They need these new qualifications. And as a result of that, they'll access into the good quality jobs. And yet we're not necessarily producing the top quality jobs and At the same time, the future of work looks quite dramatically different to what it might have done to my generation.
Absolutely.
Automation is definitely starting to change opportunities. So for young people today, those movements towards adulthood are becoming more and more difficult and more restricted. Now, that doesn't get into this debate about generations, not really. It gets sidelined by when we talk about this as a generational conflict or war. What we should be doing is saying, what are the needs of our young people in society and how are we going to support them and help them to make these kind of transitions? You know, so that for me is a far more important question than one that wants to, you know, get into this idea that we're having, you know, fights over resources, which are not really the way it is.
And how do we get those discussions going?
Well, it's an interesting question because, you know, one of the things I don't see in New Zealand politics in particular, and I think there's an election coming up, is where young people are being talked about. We don't really talk about youth homelessness. We don't talk about student debt. We don't talk about the challenges that young people face in trying to get work and hold on to work. It's a very precarious and insecure environment for work. You know, we don't have those kind of debates taking place in New Zealand at election time. What we talk about is super. And it's like, come on, you know, actually, what about the rest of the population? And I don't see, and, you know, one of the arguments is, of course, is that young people don't vote, and they don't. I mean, you know, we know that the turnout numbers among 18 to 25-year-olds is usually very low. And so they don't become a focus for much of the discussion in politics. So, you know, I don't know how we start to bring those things to the fore, but we do need to start to bring them up and talk about what sort of a world are we looking for our young people? What are we going to do to make it a better place for them? That debate doesn't get onto the political agenda.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Alan France, for speaking with us this morning. It's really interesting to kind of read your article and learn a little bit more about this, particularly being somebody who is a young student, having these arguments with my parents and maybe, just thinking a little bit more about, what other generations have had to go through and what our generation has to go through. So,
good
discussion. Good. Thank you so much for speaking with us this morning.
Okay. You have a good day, Hannah.
You too. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
That was Ready, Steady, Learn, thanks to the University of Auckland, the best university.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.